Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, the host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Billy Sage is off doing some business related to his dear wife's death. And so today I have my special man, Brian Brewer, as the co-host. And once again, we have Michael Castleman as our guest. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Diana. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Both Brian and I are in beautiful Victoria, B.C., and it's sunny up here and lovely, and you're in San Francisco.
I am. All right. Hello, Michael. How are you today?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, good.
And so I wanted to tell the listeners that we did part one with Michael Castleman May 20th. And so if you're interested, and I'm sure you will be if you haven't listened to that show already, because it's archived, you'll want to pick it up again, because Michael is the founder and site publisher, Michael Castleman. He is one of the nation's top health writers, and this is a quote from Library Journal. He's a journalist, sex educator, sex counselor, and he wrote Sexual Solutions for Men and the Women Who Love Them, a book that's been in my library ever since it first came out, 1980, it was 89, and I guess it sold over 24 years, Michael, 500,000 copies.
That's correct.
Yeah, and but today we talked a little bit about that last time and premature ejaculation and everything, and then you kindly sent me your new book, Great Sex, A Man's Guide to the Secrets of Whole Body Sensuality. And that was nominated Sex Book of the Year by the American Association of Sexuality Educators and Counselors and Therapists. And it's a wonderful book, and I just love it. So, Michael, last time you agreed to give this book away to our first caller, and we didn't have a caller. Can we do that again and try for that?
Sure. Sure, no problem. Okay, well, let me encourage people to call us. We're live, and the number is 888-874-4888. And the first caller will receive a free copy of Michael's book, Great Sex, A Man's Guide to the Secret Principles of Total Body Sex. And I believe that's what we're going to talk about today. So, again, the call-in number is 888-874-4888.
And, Michael, you've answered some 10,000 questions over the years.
At least.
At least. And before we get into the meat of the interview, so to speak, why don't you tell us about, you did last time, but I'd like you to repeat it, the 5 years you had with Playboy Advisor. I think that's especially interesting, and the follow-up study about the advisor.
Well, I published my first sex book, Sexual Solutions, in 1980, and the guy who was the editor for the Playboy Advisor read it, and he loved it, and I was shocked, and he called me one day and said, "This book reads like you wrote it for guys who read Playboy."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, that's exactly who I wrote it for." And so we sort of became buddies, and I became an informal advisor to the Playboy Advisor, and when he had a question that he was, you know, on the fence about, we would chat from time to time. And then meanwhile, he knew I was a journalist and sex educator, and eventually he asked me to answer the sex questions for Playboy, which I did for 5 years. I answered all of the sex questions that were sent into the Playboy Advisor from 1991 through 1995. And subsequent to that, about the year 2000, a study was published in an education journal about the Playboy Advisor answers. And the genesis of this study was that two professors at the University of Kentucky had argued at a cocktail party about the Playboy Advisor, and the one was a man and one was a woman, and the woman had said that Playboy was a reprehensible pornographic magazine and not one word of it was good, And the man said, well, you know, you can object to, you know, naked women and some of the stuff, but have you ever seen the Playboy Advisor? They have good answers, especially about sex stuff. She said, that's impossible. He said, no, it's true. And she said, you want to bet? And then they engaged in a friendly little wager, and I don't know what they were wagering, but the upshot of it was that the two of them reviewed every answer to sex questions in the Playboy Advisor from day one, and they published their results, which were that, number one, the Playboy Advisor was accurate and authoritative, and number two, that the Playboy Advisor was the only place in Playboy that really sort of had respect for women and wanted men to not view women as sex object stereotypes, but as whole human beings with needs. And I was very gratified because their survey covered the 5 years that I wrote for the Advisor. And I had taken, you know, some crap from women friends. Oh, how could you do that? How could you write for Playboy? And, you know, my attitude was, well, you know, Playboy readers are clearly interested in sex and sex with women, and they have questions, and I'm in the business of answering sex questions, and I don't care who I answer them for.
And for I think for a lot of men, the Playboy Advisor is their sex education.
Well, it was in my generation. I
yes,
mean,
that's
today,
what I mean. In my
in the internet, in,
yeah.
in the world of internet.
Not
you know,
now,
my kids,
you're right.
My son doesn't read Playboy, but I certainly did when I was in college, and I grew up reading the Playboy Advisor, and all of my friends did, and so, you know, in an earlier era, it was a key place, one of the few places where young men could get reasonable sex information.
Exactly. So your book, Great Sex, is reflects a lot of this sort of philosophy, and Brian is going to read the questions that open your book because they're profound.
Yes, Michael, I was really impressed by the in the introduction to your book, Great Sex, A Man's Guide to the Secret Principles of Total Body Sex. You ask 5 or 6 questions right at the beginning of the introduction, and maybe this will be some springboards for topics today, but let me read these, and maybe they'll resonate with some of our listeners, men especially. Would you like to be the great lover you've always dreamed of being? Would you like women to sing your sexual praises? Do you want your penis to be as large as it possibly can? Would you like ejaculatory control to last as long as you want? Are firmer, more reliable erections on your wish list? And would you like your relationship to feel more erotic, both in and out of bed? So those are great questions.
Thank you.
Very great questions. And so in your introduction, following those questions, you give the simple secret of great sex. What's that simple secret? Brian and I know from reading your book and also personally, but could you tell us?
The simple secret of great sex is that men should stop trying to imitate what they see in pornography. Men, it's fine. I don't care if men watch pornography. I don't care what men, you know, what kind of sex media men are involved in. But men need to understand that pornography is a male sex fantasy, and male sex fantasies are fine. You can have them as much as you want, but that's not the way real life unfolds, and it's not the way great sex unfolds. So, in fact, a good rule of thumb for great sex is that men should do the opposite of what they see in pornography.
So, oh, I like that.
For
yeah.
example, pornography is all genital and not very sensual. You know, it's mm-hmm. the two people meet, hi, hello, how are you, and then the woman drops to her knees and starts sucking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a wonderful fantasy, and I you know, have nothing against it. But in real life, great sex is 90% sensuality and only, well, not 90%, but it's probably 70% sensual and 30% genital. And pornography has no sensuality in it at all. It's all fucking and sucking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the way to have great sex. That's the way to have
a lot of sex problems, no erections, no ejaculatory control, and very irritated girlfriends or wives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what great sex is about, and a lot of what I teach men on my website, greatsexafter40.com,
which is an excellent website. I encourage our listeners to go there. You don't have to be over 40. You can get so much from it.
What I encourage people to get involved in is whole body sensuality and massage. Basically, lovemaking, great sex, is whole body massage that eventually includes the genitals. But porn contains no massage, and it's all genital. And when men are involved in all genital sex, their risk of erection problems skyrockets, their risk of ejaculatory control problems soars, and their risk of having irritated girlfriends and wives goes off the charts.
And you say that according to Sex in America survey, one quarter of women have difficulty expressing orgasm during partner sex or can't come at all. They're much more likely to express orgasm if they do what you're talking about, the leisurely, playful, creative, whole-body, massage-based lovemaking.
Absolutely.
And you have lots of good advice, like not to pull apart the labia roughly, treat her genitals gently, and especially until she's aroused. A woman who's aroused has a different response, but in the beginning it can just feel annoying.
Right. Well, one of the most popular articles on my website, I sell 80 articles on my website, and those 80 articles, about 70 of them, 65, 70 of them, come directly from my book, Great Sex, and the others are, you know, I've written since that book came out.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the best-selling articles on my website is called Caressing Women, Advanced Erotic Tips for Men. And it's amazing how few men, you know, men spend so much of their time trying to pick up women and get women, you know, wine them and dine them. And when you finally get ready for sex, a lot of guys just are sort of clueless and don't know what to do. Or what they do is try to imitate pornography, which, you know, is not the way to go.
Not the way to go.
I wrote this article, Caressing Women, Advanced Erotic Tips for Men, to suggest step-by-step ways for men to enjoy sensual massage contact with women and apart from jumping all over their breasts and between their legs. Now, I have nothing against breast play. I have nothing against genital sex. In fact, they're a magnificent part of lovemaking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're only part of the story. And lovemaking is like a huge banquet.
Mm-hmm.
And genital sex is like the dessert at the end of the banquet. And dessert is fine. Dessert is good. I love dessert. But if all you do is eat dessert and you don't have the meal, it's not satisfying.
Not satisfying.
So I try to encourage men to postpone genital play and get involved in whole body massage because that is what every survey shows that women prefer. And the actresses in porn, you know, they're actresses. They're told what to do. And none of them, I've interviewed many porn actors, men
mm-hmm.
and women,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they all distinguish between professional sex and private sex. And professional sex is what they do on the porn set, and basically they'll do whatever the director says.
Mm-hmm.
Private
mm-hmm.
sex is what they do at home, and it is nothing like what they do on the set. It's much more sensual. It's more loving, it's more playful, it's more creative, and it's a lot less genital. Although, of course, the genitals are involved, as they are in any great sex. But it's not, genital sex is not the focus of porn actors' private sex. And, you know, most men understand that pornography is a fantasy of sexual abundance with no responsibility at all. But that's not the way real life works, and it's certainly not the way real sex works in real life.
One of the porn actors you interviewed was Richard Pacheco, and through my friend Candida Royale, I don't know, it must have been 20 years ago, she had a party of some of the actors that perform in her femme films, which I like because they are more female-friendly. But I remember Richard Pacheco, and he had a lot to tell you. Do you recall what he said? And I think you put it in your book.
Yeah, it's been a while since I recalled those conversations. But Richard Pacheco, very nice guy.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of fell into pornography and wound up becoming a big star for, you know, a certain period in the 80s, I guess. He
mm-hmm.
must have been a star.
In the 80s.
And mostly he talked about how, what I remember him saying was that he had an average size penis.
Right.
And he wound up being wildly popular among the actresses, the women,
mm-hmm.
for anal scenes because, you know, the vast majority of men in pornography are selected not for their acting talent, but for having freakishly large penises.
Exactly.
And then when the director said, okay, we want anal now, I mean, a huge one, you know, hurts the girls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the girls started saying, okay, I'll do the anal scene, but I want Richard.
Uh-huh.
Because he was like normal size. And
right.
So he used to joke that he had the smallest dick that ever made the big time.
Well, Michael, while we're on the subject, do you have any statistics about what is average or normal size for a man's penis?
Yeah, the average flaccid penis is 3 to 5 inches, and the average erection is about 6 to 7 inches, and that is measured from the top. You put the ruler on top of the penis shaft, touching the base of the penis, and then you measure it to the end, and you do not pull on the penis.
Most men pull, you said in your book.
Yeah, most men pull, and actually there's a novelty. There's a novelty item that was popular some years ago called the penis ruler, which was a regular ruler, but every inch was like a half inch. So at the point that was actually 6 inches, it said 12 inches.
Oh, my goodness.
And so the guy could, like, measure his penis with the special penis ruler and come out twice as big as he actually was. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, some women do care about penis size, but a lot fewer than men who care about breast size. Men feel like it's tyrannical that, you know, women are supposedly obsessed with penis size. Well, for one thing, very few are. I mean, you can read the personal, you know, the dirty personal ads in Craigslist and where couples are looking for a threesome and they want a guy with a huge one. Okay. There are some people like that, just as there are some men who, you know, absolutely have to have a woman with a certain look or certain breast size or certain weight or hair color or whatever. But most people, when they fall in love, they like their lover's whole body.
Exactly.
They just accommodate to who their lover is. And, of course, time spent in bed only represents a tiny fraction of the time that people in a relationship are actually together. And so, you know, how important can penis size really be? The vast majority of women say it isn't. And in surveys of women, when they're asked, what are you looking for in a lover, they always say things like, you know, kindness, compassion, emotional support, a sense
of humor,
someone who's easy to talk to,
mm-hmm.
someone who's present and doesn't seem spaced out all the time
mm-hmm.
when he's around me. And every now and then, some women says, and a guy with a certain size penis. But by and large, not too many women really care about it. And then the irony of all this is that one of the, you know, the what controls the size of a penis, whether it's flaccid or erect, is the amount of blood circulating in the organ.
Yes, and that's, I bet that article on your website sells quite well.
Yeah, the article on penis size is one of the all-time greatest hits on
yeah.
my website.
The rare
a lot
truth
of guys
about,
buy it.
the rare truth about penis size.
Right.
How to make the most of what you've got. Yeah, talk about the what happens with blood flow and your health and your diet and all that.
Well, everybody knows that it's extra blood that causes a flaccid penis to become erect. But the fact is that the amount of blood that's in the penis is what controls its size, no matter whether it's flaccid or erect. So if you want to be all you can be, if a man wants to be every, you know, as well hung as he can possibly be, then he wants to do things that will improve blood flow through the penis. And one of the main things that does this is deep relaxation, because deep relaxation relaxes the muscles around the arteries that carry blood into the penis. So when guys are worried about their penis size, they suffer anxiety. And anxiety constricts the muscles around the arteries that carry blood into the penis, closes those arteries down a little bit, doesn't shut them off, because blood is always circulating through the penis. But you get less blood through the penis if the guy is anxious. So basically, the take-home message to men is, the more you worry about your penis, the smaller it's going to look to you.
It's very self-defeating.
And what you want is to relax about your size and relax in general, and then you get more blood in the penis. A lot of men know that, you know, when they're in a drafty locker room, they look down, their dick is small. Mm-hmm. But when they take a hot shower, their penis looks larger. Well, why is that? Well, it's because heat and hot water, a hot bath or a hot shower, is very relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get more blood in the penis.
And that's really, really important for people to know. I like you quote Betty Dotson often in your book, and of course she's wonderful, and she's also been a guest on the show, and I've known her for years. She's just such a character and such an amazing woman. But she says, the bottom line, and this is a quote from Betty Dotson, enjoy your penis. It's fine as it is. Make peace with it. And understand that as far as women are concerned, your tongue is more important. You'll be happier, your lover will be happier, and you'll have better sex. And then somewhere else in the book, she self-discloses that she'd much rather have a tongue on her clitoris than a penis in her vagina.
Yeah, well, Betty is a wonderful sex educator, and she is wise and funny, and she's right. Only 25% of women are reliably orgasmic from intercourse alone. And men have no idea about this. Men think that, you know, if you just fuck her harder and longer, she's going to have fantastic orgasms. Not so. Women's pleasure organ is the clitoris, which sits outside of the vagina and above it, and for most women doesn't get a whole lot of stimulation during intercourse, and most women need direct clitoral stimulation in order to have orgasms. That's why one-third of American women now own vibrators.
Exactly.
And that is why gentle hand massage of the vulva and clitoris is so important to a lot of women's erotic arousal and response, and that is why oral sex is often preferred by women for to intercourse, because oral sex focuses on the clitoris, gentle attention on this wonderful little organ that can help women come to orgasm.
And the only function for the clitoris is pleasure.
The only function is pleasure. That is it.
And yes, and I, in working with women over the last 28 years, I found that some really cannot relax into receiving cunnilingus. And, you know, many women are raised to be the pleasers, to accommodate, but not to receive. And so to lie there and receive pleasure is difficult for some, and they have to, on some level, feel entitled to pleasure. I'm entitled to pleasure, and I'm going to relax into this, and I'm going to trust that the man that's licking me down there likes being there. But I think it's up to the man, too, to reassure her. If he likes being there, he needs to tell her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Women are all the time fretting about, oh, he's bored, oh, he's tired.
Believe me, he's not. I mean, speaking as a man, I can tell you that going down on a woman is a fantastically pleasurable thing. It's so intimate. It's so sensual. I think it's one of the most exciting things about lovemaking myself.
Do we have another male voter?
I would totally agree.
prompt.
So, Michael, one question for say, some listeners, some men who might, where this idea of total body sensuality might be kind of a new concept. And any sort of, you know, two or three top tips about how to approach that or how to get into that?
Well, one way to do it is to start with getting a professional massage. And I do not mean what is available at a massage parlor.
Not a happy ending massage.
Which is the only thing you cannot get at a massage parlor is a good massage.
Right.
I often encourage couples to have a professional massage, each of them, and then to talk about what they liked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very good, Michael.
And typically what happens is that, you know, men don't really naturally warm up to massage. It takes a while for men to warm up to it. Men are sort of back slapping and punch each other in the shoulders. I mean, men's approach to physical affection is not terribly sensual. It's sort of athletic and, you know, chest bumps and all these kind of things you see in football games and basketball games. So a lot of men are sort of unfamiliar with whole body sensuality, receiving whole body massage. And so I encourage men to, you know, try it. And then most of them get comfortable with it and start to feel like, oh, now I get it. And what's even more important is when men realize that erotic pleasure doesn't just happen in the penis. It happens all over the body. And if all of your focus of touch and licking and sucking is on the penis, it's just too much pressure for that little guy, and he can't handle it. and that's when men lose ejaculatory control. But when men get involved in leisurely, playful, sensual, massage-oriented, whole-body sensuality, it spreads the arousal out over the entire skin surface. And then that takes pressure off the penis. And men who are involved in whole-body sensuality almost always find that they have improved ejaculatory control as a result. And ejaculatory control difficulties are men's number one sex problem. More men complain of ejaculatory control difficulties than complain about erection problems.
That's right.
The number one sex problem in men of all ages, not just young men. Even older guys have trouble with ejaculatory control. And a lot of that has to do with lack of sensual lovemaking.
Exactly. We are about to go to a break. And after the break, we'll come back and discuss more with Michael Castleman. Michael always has so much to say, and it's so educational, and it's so provocative and fascinating, Michael. I'm just so glad you're back, and I'm hoping that we can entice you for yet another show maybe in a few weeks. And I do thank you for putting us up on your website under Mike's Picks. That's very nice, under the radio show. And you have film and video. I think when we come back briefly, we'll talk about the O in Ohio and then let that segue into some sex toys when we come back.
Great.
Stay with us, please.
Radio Network. This is the number one radio station for progressive, independent thinkers.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No. Don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude. Thursdays, 8 p.m. Progressive Radio Network.
Your favorite show on Progressive Radio Network? Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com anytime, day or night, for all of our great shows. Don't be left out and miss important shows and information. Visit ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and be in the loop.
I'm so excited to be on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I'll be able to talk to you live, answer your questions, and work with you for your own patient rights. Tune in every Sunday at 5 p.m. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. See you on Sunday, 5 p.m.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists strive for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Come to the Progressive Radio Network each day for the best progressive minds in the world.
We are back, and I want my guest co-host today, Brian Brewer, to give the call-in number because our guest, Michael Castleman, has agreed to give a book to the first caller. His book, Great Sex.
Yes, so we encourage listeners to call in. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-874-4888.
And we teased the audience a little before the break. This is on your website, Michael, and I really do want to get hold of this, the O-O-H in Ohio, this obscure independent feature film with Liza Minnelli playing Betty Dodson. And you said it's quite amusing and even informational.
Yeah, Owen, Ohio has Liza Minnelli. It has Danny DeVito, Parker Posey, and I forget the other guy, but he's a noted actor. And basically it's about a woman in Ohio who can't have an orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of hers sends her to a women's sexuality workshop, the kind that Betty Dodson has run for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Liza Minnelli plays the sex expert, and she's fabulous, and introduces this young woman who can't have orgasms to a vibrator. And the woman has an orgasm for the first time in her life in her mid-30s, and then falls in love with her vibrator. And hilarity ensues, is all I can say. She attends one of the most funniest business meetings. She puts her cell phone on vibrate, and I don't want to give it away, but it is a scream. And it's really the best film that has ever been made about sex toys.
Yeah.
Sex toys have been with us since prehistoric times. I mean, the first dildos were invented in prehistoric times, and they were well known and widely used in the ancient world. The ancient Greeks and Romans, the Chinese, the Japanese, all used sex toys. But
vibrators are, you know, have always been sort of below the radar until fairly recently. Right now, the surveys show that one-third of American women own a vibrator, and they're still largely used for masturbation. But more and more couples are introducing vibrators into partner sex, and recent surveys by the Kinsey Institute at the University of Indiana show that about half of men have used a vibrator in partner sex at least once in their lives, though only about 10% of men use them regularly. But still, that's a lot more than we've ever had before. So men are starting to incorporate vibrators into lovemaking, and some men are starting to feel less threatened. A lot of men still feel threatened by vibrators. Oh, it's, you know, going to put me out of business. She'll prefer a machine to me. No, she won't. Vibrators cannot kiss a woman. Vibrators cannot tell a woman that they love her. Vibrators cannot gently touch a woman, make jokes, make her laugh, kiss her. Vibrators do only one thing, and they do that one thing very well. And, in fact, they're sort of a labor-saving device for men. So I encourage men to explore lovemaking with the help of a vibrator. You just might really like it.
I think if the man can reframe that, and you said labor-saving device, and see the vibrator as a friend, as a helper, that if his tongue gets tired or his hands get tired or whatever, that he can use the vibrator. I think one way for couples to start is to do a little show and tell. So the woman might show her lover how she likes to use the vibrator on herself.
Oh, absolutely, yes. If you're a man, you don't just want to take a big Hitachi magic wand and press it into a woman's vulva.
It's way too intense.
Way too intense. Definitely a show-and-tell kind of thing where the woman shows the man how she likes the vibrator used on herself, and then she guides him to using it on her. And a lot of women just don't want the man to use it on her. They would prefer that he just hold her gently or kiss her or whatever while she uses it on herself. But the other thing I want to mention is that, you know, for most women, vibrators are sort of an extra, a little extra that makes sex spicier and more pleasurable. But there are some women who are perfectly physiologically normal, who have a whole lot of difficulty having orgasms without a vibrator. They just need a lot more intense stimulation than a man's hand or tongue or their own hands can provide. And so for those women, vibrators are not an extra spicy addition to lovemaking. They're kind of a necessity, and that's fine. I mean, I'm really glad that we have vibrators so that these women can feel satisfied.
At the time I was working at the UCLA Center for Female Sexual Medicine, we determined that if a woman had not masturbated as a teenager or even in her early 20s, that probably the nerve passageways between the genitals and the brain had not been laid down for orgasm. Uh-huh. And so these women, and I have counseled with many of them, you know, since UCLA, many, and they almost, if they've never had an orgasm, and they could be 30, they could be 40, they almost always need to have a vibrator, something that will go 300 miles per hour on their clitoris. But I always tell them to set the scene, to do a lot of touching first, and to get themselves relaxed, maybe after a bath. But it's really, really important. And I've had a lot of women have their first orgasm with a vibrator, but they need that extra stimulation.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't mean she's broken.
Exactly. And for women who need vibrators to have either first orgasms or any old orgasm, what a lot of women find is that vibrators help educate them about their own sexuality and help women feel more comfortable with who they are sexually
And eventually a lot of women who thought, oh, I can't come without a vibrator, find that in fact they can, because they've learned using a vibrator, they have built those pathways that you've talked about.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And they just feel more comfortable with the full range of their own sexual responsiveness, so they can relax and enjoy pleasure and have orgasms maybe without the vibrator.
Exactly, exactly. Now, a question that you address in your book on 276 is the question, can vibrators ruin women for partner sex? And I, you know, you're such a good writer, but I just love the way you open this. Does driving ruin women for walking? No, it just gets them to their destination faster. But some women will report some numbness if they're using a lot of, if they're using a vibrator a lot. But I have found that usually if they just stop using it, go on a vibrator fast for a while, if you will, that can bring back the sensations. They don't go away forever.
Right, right. And also it has to do with the type of vibrator that the woman is using. The most popular vibrator in the world is the Hitachi Magic Wand, which is a plug-in, very powerful vibrator.
And it's a little too powerful for some women.
For a lot of women, it's too powerful. It causes some genital numbness, and it's just too intense. So
yeah.
Fortunately, there are a zillion kinds of vibrators, and I'm particularly, a lot of women have told me recently that they like the vibrating eggs.
Yes.
That are battery-powered, mm-hmm. and they're this little egg thing. It's like pressing a little a chicken egg against your vulva.
Mm-hmm.
They're small, they're curved, they're feminine-looking. You know, a Hitachi Magic Wand is like a big, you know, power tool.
Right, a power tool.
Exactly.
And a vibrating egg is somehow more feminine and less powerful, which for a lot of women is the way they want to go.
I also like Candida Royale's Natural Contours. They're really well-crafted, good quality vibrators. And I want to give my friend Candace a plug. So if people go to naturalcontours.com or even Royale, R-O-Y-A-L-L-E.com, there's especially a nice little one called the Jolie. And it's just sloped nicely that fits on the woman's clitoris, but it's small enough that it can be brought into partner play. So the woman or the man can leave it on her clitoris vibrating while they have intercourse.
Right. Yeah, the nice thing about Candida's vibrators is that they are not phallic. They're sort of post-phallic. The original vibrators were either, you know, looked like a penis or looked like a cylinder.
Yeah.
In a phallic shape, or they had the ball top like a Hitachi Magic Wand.
Mm-hmm.
But Candida's line and a few other people have similar vibrators. They're sort of contoured and they look like, you know, they're more feminine. And they can be used if the woman is lying on her back. You can just lay the vibrator right on her vulva, and as you said, the couple can have intercourse while the vibrator is nestled between their pelvises, and that can be an absolutely wonderful way to make love.
Yeah, some of her vibrators actually look like a mouse that you might have. Not a mouse, but a mouse with a computer.
Uh-huh.
Sort of shaped that way.
Well, Michael, I'd like to jump in for a moment and get back to that, you know, the topic that you said is the most frequently asked question or most issue of most concern is about ejaculatory control for men. And so what are some of the tips about how men can achieve better ejaculatory control?
Well, the first thing men need to understand is how not to do it. And how not to do it is reciting the baseball scores and trying to distract yourself.
Right.
A lot of men try to distract themselves thinking, oh, if I just don't think about it, it won't happen. No, that is 180 degrees incorrect. What you want to do, you don't want to tune out your body. You want to tune into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the most men know the feeling of what's called the point of no return, where when you realize, oh, I'm going to come, it's inevitable. And the key to ejaculatory control is to
really focus on the sensations that lead up to that point. Because once you start to feel those sensations, like, oh, I'm about to come, if you back off on the stimulation you're receiving, in other words, you pump the woman less vigorously, or she's giving you a hand job or sucking you, you give her a signal to be less intense, what men find is they back off from the point of no return to a point of high arousal that doesn't threaten ejaculation. So that's the key, to study your own sexual response and learn what it feels like to be approaching the point of no return, and then learn what it feels like to slowly back away from that and play with that moment. And then there, you know, in great...
Wait, Michael, and that's why the stop-start method of masturbation can be very useful for men when he's alone.
Right.
To yeah. masturbate with a dry hand and then work up to a lubricated hand with fantasy and really pay attention to his body and the sensations. And when he feels he's about to ejaculate, to stop and
exactly.
not to play the brinksmanship idea.
Exactly. What the program that I'm talking about is not, I had nothing to do with inventing it. I mean, the program I write about for learning ejaculatory control was developed by two or three generations of sex therapists, starting with Masters and Johnson in the late 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And sex therapists after them have embellished the program and I think improved it. So now it's much more efficient than it was 50
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing about learning ejaculatory control is that a lot of men, maybe, you know, I don't know, half, two-thirds of men, can learn good ejaculatory control using self-help resources like my book, or there's an article on my website all about ejaculatory control, and that is the single best-selling article on my site.
Mm-hmm.
But self-help does not work for everybody, and if it doesn't work for you, do not despair, because sex therapists, you know, using one-on-one therapy or therapy with a couple, enjoy enormous success, like better than 90%, teaching men how to learn ejaculatory control. It's so ironic that men's number one sex problem, the thing that drives most men crazy about sex, is basically just a bad habit, and that when men get enough information and a little coaching sometimes, they can learn to last as long as they would like.
And it's also very frustrating for the female partner. I've had a number of women say, I don't even want to start to be intimate because he's going to just come so quickly and then I'm not satisfied and he's embarrassed, and it sets in motion this negative cycle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's
I'm very well
sad.
Familiar with it. I got into the sex business because I had premature ejaculation in my 20s.
And like a lot of men do.
And I had the same issue with my girlfriend, who's now my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And just by accident, I read the Masters and Johnson book that detailed their program for how to fix it.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, my God, is it really that simple? I've been
mm-hmm.
driven crazy by this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I showed it to my girlfriend, and I said, would you help me do this? I mean, you know, it frustrates me. It frustrates you. Maybe we can fix it. Inside of a month, I was a lot happier, and so was she.
Of course. And you say, it says Michael in his own words from your website, Great Sex After 40. 40 is... 40.com, that you were asked to write an article, How to Make Love, and you refused. And your girlfriend, then now your wife, she urged you to write the story, and you write, flashing a sly smile, she said, you might learn something.
Yeah, well, I did. I did, and it was great. So,
yeah.
One of the benefits of being a health and sex writer is you read research you wouldn't ordinarily come across, and some of it can be quite useful.
Exactly. I have found it for different reasons, but similar reasons, as a sex therapist. and there's always something new to learn about sexuality, which I really like. Well, we've talked about sex toys, and and then we were going to also talk about I'm here in Victoria, and I have papers spread out on my hotel bed.
Well, Michael, I have a question
good.
For you.
I'm so glad Brian's jumping in.
Have you, over the course of the 30-plus years you've been doing this, have you seen any major trends in the generational changes in men as we, you know, as we all get older and younger men become sexual? Anything you notice about how things have changed over the last 30 years?
Well, yes, I've noticed that we live in an increasingly sexualized culture, but it is a culture that still does not provide adequate sex education for young people. And so I've been getting lots of questions on my website lately from, you know, young teenagers. I got one the other day from a girl who said, I'm 14 years old and my boyfriend and I just had sex and it really hurt. What are we doing wrong? Well, you know, obviously they know next to nothing about lovemaking. So although we live in an increasingly sexualized culture, sex education in terms of really erotic education for young people is still woefully inadequate. The other thing is that I think one of the big changes that we've seen in the last, since 1998 when Viagra was approved, was that before the approval of Viagra, there just wasn't all that much interest in sex among older people. Sex was, you know, you would get sex experts and sex therapists say, oh, yeah, you know, sex is a lifelong pleasure, blah, blah, blah. But there was very little research on it. And Viagra changed all that because all of a sudden now there was a way to make money off of older sex. And so that fueled a lot of research. And so we've had an explosion of research into sex after 40. And that was part of the reason why I launched my website, greatsexafter40.com, because, I mean, I'm well over 40. In fact, 40 is looking pretty young to me these days.
Yeah, know the feeling.
And I felt like, you know, there's plenty of information out there for younger adults, but for older people, there isn't all that much. And so on my site, although I'm happy to answer questions from, you know, any clueless 14-year-old, and people of all ages, I try to focus on sex in the second half of life because there are so many people in the second half of life, the entire baby boom generation and even the subsequent generation, every day there's more and more people turning 40. So I think it's important to provide authoritative sex information for people in the second half of life. And I think that I'm not alone in this. There is more and more emphasis on this from sexuality professionals and sex therapists and,
right. And certainly one of
all over the country.
Certainly one of the key messages is that people can enjoy sex throughout their lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Where there's a will, there's a way. I mean,
and if they do, they're probably much healthier.
No question about it.
Yeah,
no question about it.
To have sex when you're, say, 70, you have to be in reasonable good health. But also it makes you healthier because your body, with orgasm, is producing more endorphins and oxytocin and all those dopamine and all those feel-good things. And so, and I think having good sex boosts your self-esteem and the intimacy between two people and I have narrated for the Sinclair Institute back in 96, Couple's Guide to Great Sex Over 40, and then more recently, Great Sex for a Lifetime, which is targeted at baby boomers. And, you know, we find that older folks that remain sexual, they have fewer arguments. And then when they do have arguments, they get over them faster. It's just so good for a relationship to remain, to be sexual and to remain sexual. and to get help if there are stumbling blocks. I have a couple I've been working with now for about 8 months, and they're both 78. And they're saying, oh, we wished we'd come to you sooner, but anyway, they've made progress.
Well, sex is not just good for the couple. It's actually good for physical health. I mean, the number one chronic illness among people over 40 is arthritis, joint pain. And lovemaking and orgasm, as you mentioned earlier, release endorphins that are the body's own pain reliever. So the more that older people make love, the less joint pain they're going to have, and that is a marvelous gift. That, you know, so you don't have to take aspirin or rot your stomach. You can just hop in the sack and get the same benefit.
Plus, it's good aerobic exercise, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is. Well, you know, I'm all for people remaining sexual and being happier because of it. And I think your website just does such a service. And you decided to name it Great Sex After 40 because you were saying the subtitle is, with a few adjustments, sex after 40, 50, or 60 can be the best sex of your life. And it can be. You know, you have more life experience, more wisdom, more technique, perhaps.
Yeah, and more assertiveness. I mean, I think...
Assertiveness, yes.
I think women, young women, are often very reluctant to assert their own needs sexually. It's something that women need to learn. I mean, young women are trained to want to be desirable rather than to focus on their own desires.
That's exactly right.
And
so that older women often do become more assertive, and older men often become more romantic because
older men feel less urgency to get their rocks off and are more interested in mutual pleasure.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot to be said for the fact that after 40 is when there's a sort of convergence of men's and women's sexual experience and interest, so that people get along better erotically than they did, say, in their 20s, when the women were uptight about, you know, how do I do this? How can I, you know, manage him? And he's thinking, how can I get laid? And he's coming too fast, and she's not focused on her desire. I mean, it's tough to be young and have sex. There's a lot of challenges. And there's challenges of sex at every age. But one of the things that goes away after 40 is this vast gulf between the sexes. I mean, there's a convergence of sexual interest and sexual understanding that can be quite marvelous for people who remain sexual later in life.
Yes, and there's another, we're almost out of time, but the body image for a woman is often huge, body image problems.
Right.
And they're often worse when a woman, even a beautiful woman, when she's young, because she's so sort of self-focused and worried about a chubby thigh or something instead of thinking about her partner and her own pleasure.
Exactly.
And then often women do become more comfortable with themselves as they're older, and they also realize that their partner really doesn't care about a chubby thigh or a drooping breast so much. This is a woman that they love, and they love to touch her and feel her, and right?
Exactly. Exactly, yes.
So we've come to the end of the show again. It went very quickly, Michael. Thank you for another very inspiring hour.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Diane. I really appreciate it, and hope that your listeners can stop by greatsexafter40.com, and I hope we can talk again.
And we will, and I know Brian wants to say goodbye to you, too.
Yes, Mike, nice to hear from you again, Michael.
Brian, nice to be with you.
All right, and tune in next week, all you listening people, and some of you archive, but please keep in touch with us. Love, Lust, and Laughter. Bye-bye.
Bye.